Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. I am going to go right to today's guest because we're going to talk about the love letter aspect later. But you know that anytime you have a good thought, if you put it on paper and mail it to somebody, you've changed a day and maybe a life. Today's guest is Hunter Lee Hughes, who is an actor and a filmmaker, although you described yourself in the opposite order.
Yeah, I think that as time has gone on, sort of creating the film from the ground up as
well. Can we talk about you from the ground up?
Okay, yeah.
For a minute,
yeah.
Just to get there. Okay, so I mean, how did you start? What did you do before you did this? How did you know you wanted to do this? How did you know you could do this?
I'd actually been acting since I was a kid, so I was 12 years old.
Okay.
And believe it or not, I had I'm from Houston. I had a grandmother who was my biggest fan, and she had a 1983 white Cadillac that she drove until, you know, the 2000s practically. And she used to drive me around to auditions and to meet agents.
Okay.
And so I booked my first film as a kid.
So you had help right away.
I had help. My grandmother, you know. And
what was your first?
My first film was called Haunted. And it was actually, this is, truth is stranger than fiction, but it was a kid's film that was shot in 3D. So it was very technically complicated, but they were creating these four or five videos for like some kind of kid's headset where they could then watch the films through this toy. And they basically, if I hope I'm not insulting the producers, but I believe it kind of ran out of money at some point in the film. I've still never seen it to this day.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
But
I didn't know they were doing this kind of thing in Houston. I always think of LA and New York. So I guess all over the world people are.
Yeah. You know, I had an agent in Houston as a kid and would go out on auditions. And of course, I think when you're a kid that maybe is more accessible to you, because usually when they're casting kids, they really go out,
yes,
all over the place to try to find them, you know. But this particular film was actually shot in Houston.
But by a company in Houston?
Yeah. Okay. I think there was a Houston-based company. I'm not sure where the toy company was based.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
And I was only a kid, so I was only getting, you know, for me, it was just like, I remember telling my mom, like, It's shot in 3D, like Jaws number 2. So it's going to be like big like that. You know, I was confident that it was going to, you know, grow somewhere around like the Jaws series.
But you were obviously enthusiastic about this. This is something that you wanted.
You know,
it
was long hours.
Were you the first one to say, I want to do this? Or did
somebody
just look at how cute you were and say, you should be doing this?
No. I was driving the whole thing. I was really excited about it.
Good.
And I just loved it. I don't know. I felt at home on the film set, you know, in a way that I didn't feel even at my school or something like that.
What spoke to you?
I loved hanging out with the other kids on set. I loved hanging out with the makeup people and feeling there was just a creative energy in the air.
Okay,
and
the answer to the question. Yeah,
I guess, you know, I haven't thought about it in years actually, but it was really invigorating, and I felt really alive and in some ways important, you know, because even though we were kids, they really needed us,
mm-hmm,
you know, and it was a movie about kids. So, and my grandmother was sort of this just wonderful, kind, kooky.
I was going to say, she sounds kind of a
adventurer.
Little zippy.
Yeah.
Is she still with us?
She's not.
Oh.
No, that was actually she's the first person I've sort of,
lost.
I was with when she passed away.
Oh.
And it was like
how old were you?
Oh, this was just a couple of years ago.
Oh, so you were an adult man already.
I was an adult man.
Okay.
By that time. But it was, it was a real loss. She wasn't so old when she passed away. She was only 81, and it kind of snuck up out of nowhere. It was one of those. But what a great woman. Both my grandmothers were really wonderful women.
Nice. And so, was this your mother's mother?
This is my father's mother.
Your father's mother. And is your mother's mother still with us?
No, she's passed away as well. But she was actually, my mother's mother was actually kind of what got me working on the new film that I'm doing.
Okay, so let's work up to that. Okay, so after this first thing, that you thought was going to be Jaws number 3.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
Well, you know, honestly, I think puberty.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget how big a deal puberty is for a kid and how
For a boy, insane.
And
yes.
I somehow, that vibrancy and the nerve that I had, I a little bit lost it and felt more awkward and different things. And then I remember I auditioned for a play at my school. And I think also my kid ego got a little out of control that I booked this, you know.
Big
Jaws number 3.
Uh-huh.
Too big.
I see, okay.
And then probably rightfully so, I auditioned for a part of my school play and I didn't get it. And I didn't get any part. And I think that I sort of allowed that experience instead of sort of like just going back to the grind, that with the puberty kind of really mm-hmm. affected my confidence. And it was a while, it wasn't until I was maybe 19 or 20 in college that I began, you know, really pursuing the performing arts again and kind of rediscovering
it. Okay, let's get to that. But, you know, you're talking about puberty, and I think the difference between a little boy and a man is so huge that getting through that must be really jarring.
Yeah, I think it's...
Girls are closer to being women than boys are to being men.
I've never thought about that in my life, Janet, but I think you're right. And I think... I'm glad we're talking about it, and I feel like people need to talk about it more, because young men are really struggling right now.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, with these terrible school shootings, and
even just the physical changes,
yeah.
Let alone what you're called on to be in life.
Exactly. Okay, I've never thought of that, but I think it is somewhat true, and you don't really get, none of us really gets a manual, but,
I guess
you
not,
know.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you got to go through that, who am I? Like, you look in the mirror, and what was there a year ago is not what's staring back at you by any means.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So what happened then after that?
So then in college, I went to Trinity University in San Antonio, and I took a class where we had to create a sitcom for the closed-circuit television station at our university.
Oh, nice.
And in that case, I got to write some of the episodes and direct some, and we'd all kind of produce them together, but also acting in them. And that experience really reinvigorated, you know, my love for mm-hmm. performing. And one of the young ladies that was on the team with us was sort of the super cool, like the cool sorority, not the cheerleader sorority, but the cool chick sorority that had black eyeliner and smoked cigarettes. And I remember she said to me, you know, Hunter, you're funny. You're funny. This is good. You know what I mean? And you know how young people are, but even I still remember that, because this strange sense of validation from someone that wasn't really in my circle got me thinking, like, maybe I can do this.
There's nothing like a compliment from somebody who is not your mommy or your grandma.
Yeah.
To open your eyes.
Or your friend, really.
Oh, that too, I guess.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
I mean, well, we became friends, but
yes,
there, it's
yes.
not like a natural, like, not my tribe.
Right. It's not my heart speaking, it's my sense, yes.
And so I thought, I do really love this. And I'm hearing now, I think I just needed to hear it, that maybe I'm good at it. You know, I just needed a little something. So then I sort of became refocused on pursuing it the way I had as a child.
And so then you did whatever you did in college, but then after college...
I moved to L.A. within 6 weeks.
Oh, you started to say, so you drove... Talk about
yeah, yeah,
that.
Yeah. So I drove... Yeah, yeah. My father and I drove in a U-Haul with a U-Haul behind us, or... I know. I think we drove the U-Haul truck. I think it was a U-Haul truck.
Oh, that makes
truck.
More sense, yes.
Yeah. So we drove through El Paso... From Houston. That
so
was the first
were,
time
so
I'd seen
So they were
El Paso.
On your side for coming to L.A., obviously, if he was coming with you.
It's funny. My extended family, I won't name names, but some people in my extended family were against it. Because my family is very close-knit. We used to all have dinner every Sunday. That entire extended family, cousins, everything. And I was told by some people in the extended family, if you move to L.A., you're setting a bad example for all your cousins, all your family, that
yeah.
it's okay to leave Houston.
Yes.
And we want people to stay here.
Yes.
But my father was very supportive. And my father, who's an extremely successful mechanical engineer, he's helped build plants, and now he's working on, you know, environmentally friendly technologies. You know, he's worked in Korea and Spain and Saudi Arabia. But what he had wanted to do when he was in college was to be an aerospace engineer. And he had sort of allowed himself to give in to some of the voices that said, that's too competitive, that's too tough, you'll never get a job. And so he chose mechanical engineering, which, you know, still engineering, still, you know. But he always remembered how he had wanted to do the aerospace engineering and to not do it. So he said, no, do it. Do it.
Good for him. I'm going to cry.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so what was your next step here? I'm always interested in how people go to a new city with that kind of, you know, perception of what you want to do, goals, dreams, and then what do you do?
Well, I did a couple of things. I at first got an internship, and I also enrolled in an acting class, you know, which I needed. And so I kind of simultaneously started, and then that internship led to a job.
Doing
reading.
What?
I was a story analyst for Paramount Classics and Paramount
Vantage.
Oh,
so you went right to, oh, good for you.
So I was, I did an internship for a couple of months, and I was doing extra work. I was doing, you know, there were all kinds of odd jobs that
good.
I would do,
okay.
You know, and then I took an acting class, and, yeah, my acting teacher actually, you know, really invested in me as an actor. His name is Michael Kearns, and he cast me in my first play here in Los Angeles.
Oh, I see a love letter coming up. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was your first play?
It was called Trafficking in Broken Hearts, speaking of. Yeah. And it was, yeah, I was really honored to get into it. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience.
So but you're a filmmaker now. But did you like live theater better at the time? Or
I loved
not?
Live theater. Yeah. I still love it. I sort of felt like it was this habit I had to give up because financially it's just really tough. But as a creative person, to be able to play a character that you go through the entire, you know, arc of this character in 2 hours, and you get to be so present with the other actors and building that, that's amazing.
And the people you're telling the story to.
Yeah, absolutely. And the audience is there, and you get that direct, immediate feedback from them. You know, even, are they wiggling? Are they still? Are they gasping? Are they laughing?
Are they planning tomorrow's menu?
Yeah.
So I have a question, though, because you said financially it's so hard. You know, you can't just be. So maybe is that the reason, do you think, that you see so many actors later in their life than going back to the stage?
I that makes total sense to me. That makes total sense to me.
After a career where they've piled up enough, you know, wealth to live on forever, and then suddenly they're going back to live theater.
Because they want that meaning and something that, yeah, I've just befriended Bryant Rawl, who is the nephew of Esther Rawl.
Oh,
and of course,
my
she's
goodness.
A, you know,
yes.
She's.
Who doesn't remember her?
Yeah, she famously left the show Good Times during the third, after the third season, because she thought they were writing too stereotypically of single black females
and
in that era.
Everyone and in that family.
And how brave of her to walk away from that.
Oh,
big.
I see what you're saying, yes.
And then I was talking to him about, like, what did happen to her? And he said she just loved live theater, and she did all these tours of A Raisin in the Sun. And I thought that was so beautiful, just this image of her, like, after walking away from that experience, you know, performing something as significant as A Raisin in the Sun, you know, again and again. And so I think what you're saying is true. Like, maybe as you get later in the... I mean, I wish I could do more now, but I feel that I've always had a pragmatic side to me, too.
Well, and you've got... Of course. I mean, that makes sense. Because if you don't take care of that, you're not going to be able to do anything, maybe.
Yeah.
So and you're young, so you'll get to that.
Yeah.
So tell me about your film and how you decided to make this and how did this come about?
Well, as I was mentioning, my mother's mother was sort of the first touchstone for the film. So she passed away in 2007. And then my mother and my brother and I, as people do, it's just a really weird phenomenon. But, you know, we just sort of walk through her house and I'll take this, you take that, you know, how else are you going to, you know, it happens. It's so strange.
It
happens
to
all of us.
You want to grab parts of her to keep. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I said, I'll take the poetry collection.
Oh,
Yeah. So now here's what's weird, Janet. So it really was on my shelf, these collection, these books that she read for a couple of years before I even cracked one open. And then I started reading them. And here's the deal. Women of her era, and men of her era for that matter, they weren't as fluent in expressing themselves emotionally as we are today.
Oh, you bet.
So what I found when I would read these poems is that certain poems she circled, other ones she starred.
Oh, that spoke for her.
Other ones she would underline things in the poems and write things in the margin, like, this reminds me of my friend Jenny, or like my father, or you know what I mean? And so the poems, first of all, there were so many great poems there that just reading them in and of itself was a wonderful experience. But then they also became sort of like puzzle pieces for me, for my grandmother's own emotional experience as a human being. Because naturally, you know, even though I think I was in my 20s when she passed away, but, you know, I was related to her as a grandson. So I saw her very much through that point of view.
Right.
But of course, her experience was much larger than that, you know. And yes. So these poems were clues,
yes,
to that. So then I thought, well, you know, my passion has been cinema, you know.
Yes.
So I want to find a way to combine her passion and my passion. And so I've created this, certainly not alone, but I've directed this film where, you know, that poetry is like that. It's like it's like puzzle pieces to the protagonist's
okay, so
psyche.
That is so lovely. I'm just really in awe of what you're saying. And I sometimes in the conversation of love letters with people, and they'll want to know how much to write. You know, can they? How sexy can they be? How open can they be? Even today.
Mm.
And my attitude is, do it. It's just between you and the sweetheart you're sending it to when it's one of these kind of romance, or any kind, really. It's between you and one other person. Say what you feel. You have to understand that somebody may find it after you're gone.
Yeah.
Let them learn a little something about Grammy.
Yeah.
That's my attitude, and that's what you're having the joy of doing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
She's not just, she was never just your grandmother.
Sure.
For a good part of her life, she'd never heard of you. She was not your anything.
Absolutely.
She was her something.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so
you don't really think
of that. You know, you don't really...
I'm so glad you're talking about this.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this case, I didn't have anything even as explicit as that. I just had these kind of clues.
Right.
These sort of, what is it, cryptic
yes.
things.
More
but
fun.
Even, yeah, maybe more fun. So, yeah, maybe I would, yeah.
Do you
yeah.
have the feeling when you're going through these books, are you aware that you're touching something that felt the touch of her hand?
I had never really thought of that, to be honest with you. I did.
Is this as close as you can get to holding hands with her now?
That's interesting. That's interesting. I definitely thought about the markings, you know,
yes.
the penmanship and the,
huge.
You know. By the way, technology is great and advances are great, but we forget that there are losses with it. And what I will say about my grandmother and my grandfather, they had better penmanship than people have these days. You
right.
know, they
well,
put
it was
more
a, it
time.
Was, it was something that people really learned to do. But there's another thing that you're touching on that I think is just critical, that technology changes every 23 minutes. And what you think you put your heart and thoughts and soul on 20 years ago, those floppy disks, you know, toss them down the toilet, it's not accessible.
Right.
A good piece of paper and a pen still seems to be the most reliable information storage.
Yeah.
Because you have letters that are 100 years old and they're as legible as yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are you going to do here?
Well, we just finished the film, so it was shot in black and white. It's kind of got this neo-noir
But who wrote it and how was it written? I mean, how did you
well,
work all this,
so,
can you say?
Yeah, sure. So the film is basically about a family that lives in downtown Los Angeles, and they're an artist family. The mother's an avant-garde painter, and the father is an actor, and they have a kind of really creative kid. And the family kind of goes through some trouble. And so then it's the intersection of this family in trouble with an all-male literary secret society that kind of decides to help the child. And so it's sort of this strange tale. It is kind of a mind-bender film, so I'm struggling with how much to give away. But,
oh, don't. But say the name of it again and where we can find it.
Yeah, it's Guys Reading Poems. And for right now, you can't find it because it's not out yet. But you can find our website, guysreadingpoems.com, and we have a lot of information there. We just finished the film in October.
Okay.
It should be out in the first quarter of it should premiere in the first quarter of 2016.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm really, really proud of it. I'm more proud of it than anything else I've done in my career so far. So we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see. 3 years it took to make it. And
I mean, that you had the whatever it took to go for the books of poems, that you finally opened them and found what you did. This is like King Solomon's Mines and that scene where they open the trunk and it's just filled with jewels.
And just think, from walking through that house, you know, what if I hadn't said, oh, I'll take the poetry collection?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That you had, you know, whatever it took to some little portion
I'm really happy with it, and I think my I don't know if my grandmother would like the film because it's such a weird film and she wasn't really a film person, but I think in some way she is honored by the film.
For sure. So let me ask you this, just in taking this further, and because I'm so about letters. Do you write letters to people?
I have, certainly, yeah.
Oh, okay. What kind do you write? And to whom, if I may?
Well,
in general, without names, if you don't want.
You know, my mother is a very big letter writer.
Oh, lovely. You have all hers or some of hers?
Some of hers. Mm-hmm. Many. She writes so many that it's a struggle between the nostalgia to keep something and the clutter.
Yeah.
But I've definitely kept a lot of them, and she always was, first of all, very big on thank you letters.
Those are love letters for sure.
And so those are some things that I've written. And I can't honestly say that every letter that my mother sends me that I respond to it with a letter, because a lot of times it's like I talk to her on the phone then say, I got your letter.
Yeah.
But sometimes I have responded to her with a letter. So I'd say most recently in my life, it's been my mother that I've exchanged letters with. Now, even when I was in, you know, my parents were divorced. So even in high school, I would go to high school and I live with my father. And then in the summers, I would live with my mother in another state. So I've even found letters from my friends, because even at that time, we would write letters.
Yeah.
And so I have to say, you know, like I had a friend named Yukari, and she was born in Japan, but then moved to Houston, and I found some letters from her, and they were so cute because the packaging, even, or the way the paper—I don't—I don't know.
You
some
know
people
why?
Are really
well,
big on that,
because a letter is really a gift,
yeah,
and that envelope is really the gift wrap. And the Japanese, by the way, have a whole tradition of gift wrap. It's very interesting.
Interesting.
Yes, part of, I mean, the gift wrap in Japanese culture. I have some friends who, and it's quite amazing, the fabrics that are used, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah, and even when I was growing up also, you know, because, you know, I had this two homes in two different states, family members from various, you know, like my dad and his family members would write me when I was with my mom, and vice versa. So
okay,
I had
so you
a
have
lot
a whole
of those.
Life in this. You're not one of these people who's grown up with never. I think that's really nice.
No, I'm too old to be one of those people that, you know. I mean, it's really changed. It's really changed.
Yes.
And
but still, the gift of it.
I have to tell you, I won't say his name, but there's a young man who's actually a close friend of mine, and he really struggled with his family because he grew up in a very, very rigid family that didn't accept him as a gay man. And I sent him a Christmas card. I probably sent 20 people Christmas cards that year, 25 people. And he actually worked next door at the time. He was the personal assistant to an actress that lived in the building next door. And the day after Christmas or something, I get this knock on my door. And it's this guy, this, you know, friend of mine. And he was really emotional. And he said, your Christmas card that you sent me was the only, like, Christmas mail I got.
Oh, and
it meant
goodness.
So, you know, it meant so much to him because his family had not been with him on Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, and he's quite a bit younger than I am. He's maybe, you know, 10, 12 years younger than I am. And I realized that though people that age don't exchange that with each other. You know, they exchange messages, of course. But, you know, I think to have something on paper, it meant enough for him to, you know, kind of walk over and show up unannounced.
It seems always that it does. You know, that everybody's got Helvetica and Lucida Bright, and nobody has your handwriting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't have time to go into it, and I don't even know if you'd be interested necessarily, but what handwriting carries is huge. It's like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you something else. I'm thinking, you know, when I talk to somebody who's doing what you're doing, and you're certainly involved in a particular history, that of filmmaking, and I don't know, letters to your grandmother, catching her up on things, and letting her know what her first taking you to that audition led to. The specific, you're smiling at
yeah.
that. Wouldn't that be something down the line? Let somebody find that in 100 years.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And learn a little something more about you and your grandmother and the history of filmmaking. I mean, some PhD student's going to find that in 100 years and get something good out of it.
That's probably true.
You know? So.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea.
Who would you mail it to?
Oof.
You.
Yeah.
What did you call her?
My
father's,
yeah, I called her Mamaw,
mm-hmm.
and my mother's mother I called Grammy.
So,
but we called her Kathleen for many years because she was very proud of her long legs, and she would do exercise. She would do, like, you know, 200 sit-ups a day, and so we would call her Kathleen or Kay. And then maybe when I was like 10 or 12, it was okay to call her Grammy at that point. But she didn't, you know,
she
because
didn't want to be old enough to be a yes.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. Yes. That's very cute. So I don't know. I just think any kind of letters that people write, and it's your history documented in your own hand.
Yeah.
And it's going to be so valuable also to you when you're 80.
Yeah, because you forget stuff.
And you may even forget who you were now because we evolve and we become, you know, different facets take over just as a look into your own self. Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
Oh,
very
I can't wait
idea.
To see this movie that you've done, though, the whole business of investigating through – Didn't they? There's a movie now out, just came out about Mother Teresa based on her letters.
I don't know about it, but I would be fascinated to.
I think it's out right now. I just read it. I saw it in the paper a couple of weeks ago. All based on her letters.
Yeah, well,
you put together a life through those kind of clues.
And you're right. You know, the academics of the future, they better be good at hacking because, you know.
Oh, that's
lovely. Otherwise,
that's gonna be, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise right. What it's, you know, because we all know, like, you know, many writers, politicians, thinkers, you know, their work is put into context often through their
right.
letters.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Oh, well, I want to thank you for doing
oh,
this.
Oh, thank you
me.
So
I'm
much,
so
Janet.
I'm going to look forward to this. And
okay, great. I'll
maybe
keep you posted.
Exactly what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
So, and as time progresses, that maybe sometime you'll come back if you want to talk about something else you're doing.
That'd be great.
Wonderful. So I just want to say, until next time, please remember that I always say this. I'm going to just get the Boring of the Year award one of these days, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, there is always an occasion, and writing a love letter is a special occasion. Just like making notes in the margins of poetry books, leave clues about who you are. You know, everybody's life is worth being told. And, you know,
Absolutely.
Your life is as worth a story as Romeo and Juliet's. And the difference there is with them, somebody thought to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
And you're thinking to do it.
Yeah.
You're okay, perfect. I don't even know why I'm not making this connection. You are exactly that storyteller. Good for you. Thank,
Thank
you.
Thank you, Janet.
Okay, so until next time, this is Janet Gallen and
Hunter Lee Hughes.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.